The Texaco Star Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody. With our star comedian, Fred Allen. Kenny Baker and Portland Hopper. Our guest, Mr. Archibald Crosley, founder of the famous Crosley Research Organization. Wynn Murray and Al Goodman's orchestra. It's Texaco time. Ladies and gentlemen, the Belmont Park Racetrack opened this week. I don't know who looks good tomorrow for straight, place, or show. But tonight, I give you a man who comes straight to the microphone, takes his place, and starts the show, Fred Allen, in person.
Thank you. Thank you. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now, and that brings me to you, Mr. Wallington. What was that feedback send-off you just had, that straight place and show stuff? Say, where did you pick up that jockey jogging, Jimmy?
Well, I've been going out to the track, Fred.
You have? Oh, I didn't know.
Sure, I've played every race since the season opened at Jamaica.
Well, how are you doing?
I'm losing 50 cents.
No kidding.
Oh, it's a chump's racket. You know, I ought to have my head examined. I could kick myself and hit...
Wait now. Wait, don't overdo it, Jimmy. Watch it. Be careful. And I think you'd better quit betting. I can see that you haven't the temperament to be a horse player, Jimmy. Now, let me tell you about a real horse player. Mm-hmm. You're howling and going to kick yourself from here to some destination you forgot to mention because I don't think you could make it. I don't think you could kick yourself from here. I mean, if your legs look like two swans' necks that weren't starched years ago. Now, let me tell you, you're hollering about the 50 cents. Let me tell you about a real horse player. Last year, the racing season opened, and this horse player lost 7 races a day, every day for 29 straight days. He never said a word. The 30th day, he was down to his last $2, Jimmy, and he put the $2 on a long shot in the first race. The horse won and paid $50. He bet the 50 right back, won the second race at 10-1. He bet the 500 on the third race. The horse paid 100-1. He won the first 6 races straight. The money was rolling in. Before the last race started, he looked in the big potato bag he was dragging around by this time. And he found that up to then he had run his original $2 up to $207,000. There was just one more race to go. Well, in the last race, he picked a horse named Gedalia. Without batting an eyelash, the gambler put the whole $207,000 on Gedalia on the nose. It was a photo finish. Gedalia lost. He had a pug nose. Well, the gambler's $207,000 was gone. Well, he got back to the hotel. He was hanging up his coat that night. His wife said, "How did you do at the track today, honey?" He said, "Okay, I only lost $2. Well, that is the temperament you need. That is the temperament you need to be a successful horse player. What do you think of that, Jimmy?
Gosh, that fellow should have blown his brains out.
Well, he did years ago. That's how he became a horse player in the first place. And now that we... There's more laughing going on behind me than there is in front of me. Now that we have learned your lesson, Jimmy, let us turn to the latest news of the week.
The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. New York City, New York. On May 6th, the annual awards of the Pulitzer Prizes in Letters and Journalism were announced by the trustees of Columbia University. Tonight, the Texaco News makes its own Pulitzer Awards. Pulitzer without the Litzer. And the first award for editorial writing goes to Jepworth Tilton Boswell. Did I get your name right, Mr. Boswell?
That is correct. Jepworth Tilton Boswell.
Tilton. You have two middle names?
Yes, I was christened in a small room.
Oh, I see.
The parson raised his voice on my middle name. There was an echo.
Oh.
Yes, I was doomed to go through life with two middle names.
Tilton. And tonight, two Tiltons and all, you are here winning the Texaco Pulitzer Award.
Yes. For brevity in editorial writing.
Oh, you work on a newspaper, do you, Jeb?
No, I write magazine editorials.
Magazine? For which magazine?
The Digest, Digest.
Well, what is that?
The Digest, Digest is the newest Digest magazine. It digests all of the other digests.
Oh, it, it digests...
Yes, the Digest, Digest digests the Digest news... For people who are too busy to read Digest.
Digest. Well, on a magazine like this, your editorials have to be brief.
Well, not only brief, but boiled down.
Ultra concise, in other words.
Yes. A full-length editorial usually runs about one word.
One word? It comes out monthly, you say, the magazine?
Yes.
You only write one word a month?
Yes, but it has to be the right word. It's a nerve-wracking job.
I can tell by looking at you that it is a nerve-wracking job. Well, tell me, Jepworth, what are some of your recent one-word editorials?
Well, let me think. Oh, yes. In January, the mayor said, "Shall we move the aquarium uptown?"
And your editorial was?
"Let's."
Very good.
In May, the Treasury published next year's income tax rates.
And your editorial was?
Ouch.
Excellent. Sentiments of millions. And now the editorial that won you our Pulitzer Award.
Last week, the park commissioner said, "Squirrels must stop littering Central Park with their food."
And you wrote?
"Nuts."
Thank you, Jepson, Tilton Boswell. The next Pulitzer Award for the worst play written during the past year... ...goes to... I should explain to the radio audience this enormous laugh that has preceded our next guest, the playwright. He has come to the microphone with a Cerise Inverness on, with a belt in the back... and double-breasted button shoes. And he's receiving the Pulitzer Award for the worst play written during the past year. He's Finley Fink, Jr. How many plays did you write last year, Finley?
I wrote 300 plays, every play a masterpiece.
300 plays. And how many of your plays were produced?
None.
Well, why, Finley?
I refuse to give in to the theater.
What? Or to the barber, either, I know. Well, how do you mean you refuse to give in to the theater?
Realism. I demand realism.
Realism?
Yes. What do you see in every theater today? Scenery painted on canvas. Is that realism? No.
Oh, you want...
In my play, if a scene is in front of Grant's tomb, I want Grant's tomb on the stage.
Oh.
If the second act is in Lindy's restaurant, I want Lindy's restaurant and Lindy personally right up there on the stage. That's realism.
I see your point. Now, what plays have you written?
One is an intimate comedy. The scene is the Grand Canyon.
The Grand...
The Schuberts turned me down.
Well, after all...
My other play is a mystery. I call it Arsenic and Old Boulder Dam.
Arsenic and Boulder Dam.
The Theater Guild gave me the brush.
They didn't get all the lint off you, though, I see. Well, you can't blame these...
These will never be produced.
You won't compromise?
Well, as a gesture to my landlady, I'm working on a small play now.
A gesture to your landlady. Mm. I see.
It's in three acts.
What is the play called?
Morning, Noon, and Night.
Morning, Noon, and Night. An allegory?
Yes. The curtain goes up. The sun is shining. It is morning. The curtain comes down.
That is the first act?
Yes. Suddenly the curtain goes up again. The stage is a giant factory whistle.
Yes?
The factory whistle blows. Woo-hoo! It is noon. The curtain comes down.
That is the second act?
Yes.
What happens then?
The third act.
The third act.
The curtain goes up. It is pitch dark. It is night. The curtain comes down. Thunderous applause.
That is the end of the play?
Yes, it is brute realism, stark and unadulterated.
But your play only runs 3 minutes. How can you stretch it out to run 3 hours?
I'm writing long intermissions.
Long intermissions. Well, there will be the middle of the play. And thank you, Finley Fink, Jr. The Pulitzer Award for Poetry goes to the little-known poetess, Mrs. Pearlie Puttifer. Where is your home, Mrs. Puttifer?
I live in Upper Ozark, Ozark County, in the Ozark Mountains.
You do your writing there, do you?
Well, I don't do penciling or penning, if that's what you mean.
You don't do penciling or penning. Well, how do you write your poetry?
I whittle my poems onto trees with a bowie knife.
You cut all of your poems right into the trees, there. Well, do you save your verses, do you?
Yep. If I like a poem, I cut down the tree and put it away in the wood bin.
You cut down the whole tree. Well, you must have quite a collection by now.
Yes, reckon I must have 3 or 4 chords of poems laying around the cabin.
3 or 4 chords of poetry. The woodpeckers ever get away with any stanzas, do they, down your way?
Once in a while.
Once in a while. Yeah. Well, what sort of poems are these you have saved, Mrs. Puttifer?
Mostly Ozark odes. Why did they dig Ma's grave so deep?
Yeah, that's one of your poems.
Yeah.
I see.
Then I wrote a sequel to it. Ma'll be a long time rising when the great day comes.
On account. What other poems have you written?
She had on her Sunday burlap because it was her wedding day.
Very good, very good. A Sunday burlap. Hey.
Then I wrote Grandpa's Still Beside the Still.
And which poem won you the Texaco Pulitzer Award, Mrs. Puttifer?
It's called Plea for the Big Toe.
A Plea for the Big Toe. Well, how does it go?
What has a big toe done to deserve the abuse it's getting now? Sticking out of the open-toed shoe, it rides the foot like a plow. Why is the big toe out in the cold? Cast from its shoe like a sheep from the fold. Jumping out like a stepped-on thumb. Hitting the road like a bum. How come? Has mutiny started in women's shoes? Are the 4 little toes 5th columnists? If they ain't, what's driving the bull toe out? What's making big toes isolationists?
That's very good, and thank you. This is Curly and Curly. And now a young man who would have received a Pulitzer Prize if a prize had been awarded for distinguished vocal achievement, Kenny Baker. Kenny's first song tonight is Georgia on My Mind.
Melodies bring memories that linger in my heart. Make me think of Georgia. Why did we ever part? Some sweet day when blossoms fall and all the world's a song, come on. Georgia, Georgia, a song of you comes as sweet and clear as moonlight high. Other arms reach out to me, other eyes smile tenderly, still in peaceful dreams I see back to you. Georgia, Georgia, no peace I find, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Other arms reach out to me, other eyes smile tenderly, still in peaceful dreams I see the road leads back to you. Georgia, Georgia, no peace I find, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Thank you. That was very nice, Kenny. And now a word from Larry Elliott.
Oh, just call me Uncle Larry, Fred.
Uncle Larry? Why, that makes you sound like one of those announcers on those kiddie programs.
Well, that's just the way I feel, Fred. Like one of those fellows who tell the kids where to find their birthday surprises.
Oh, you mean the ones, those laughing gentlemen who say, if little Johnny Sludge will look under the George Washington Bridge, he'll find a pleasant surprise 20 feet deep.
Yes, almost like that, Fred, but for grown-ups. I'm telling the motorists of America where they can find a pleasant surprise. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a real surprise waiting for you the next time you're driving. Yes, your car holds a surprise for you. A difference in the way it responds, the feel of it on the highways, on the hills, and in traffic. When you fill up with Texaco Sky Chief gasoline. For then you have surging, soaring power underfoot that delights you with quick takeoffs. A new sense of flowing motion on the straightaways. Eager climbing power, slow traffic too. Sky Chief provides the fun of handling a lively, a spirited car under control. So put yourself in the frame of mind to fly the highway with Sky Chief, your Texaco dealer's premium gasoline for those who want the best.
Thank you.
Astral Goodman has just committed a musical forgery, his version of Marie Alina. You know, I was standing out there and back just now, and there's a rumor going around that the man who landed in Scotland yesterday was not Rudolf Hess. It was Wrong Way Corrigan flying from Omaha to Seattle. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Mr. Allen!
Well, not now, but not now. Wait a minute, did I stop anything with that? Not now, Portland. Gee, I'm
busy.
But
there's a man in the audience.
Well, I know them. There's a man in the audience. The place is full of them here. I've seen them.
But this man has a portable radio.
You mean he's in here?
And he's tuning in on another program.
On his radio? Where is he?
Right there in the first row.
Oh, yes, this old gentleman. Say, you, are you with the portable radio?
Hey.
Would you just come up here a second, please?
Yeah.
What's the big idea?
You have to speak up, Bob. I'm deaf.
What are you doing in here with that portable radio?
Oh, I'm tuning in on the program.
What program?
This here program, Bob.
You come in here with a portable radio to tune in on this program?
Well, I got there, Bob. I'm so dang deaf, that's the only way I can hear you.
Yeah?
And I get the studio show in one ear, and I get you over the radio in the other ear.
Well, excuse me. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, I don't think it'll rain. Might tomorrow.
Gosh, he is deaf, isn't he?
He sure is. How deaf are you, Pop?
Well, I'm so deaf. I'm so deaf when I talk to myself, I gotta write it down so I'll know what I'm saying.
Really?
Well, I'll get back to my seat. Where is it? I can't see neither.
No, not there. Not there. You're sitting on the floor.
Oh, no wonder my legs wouldn't hang down.
Well, now that order has been restored, we can return to our guests. During recent months, the newspapers have been fraught with polls and surveys. The voice of the people has been asked to express an opinion on every conceivable subject and issue rampant. Now, tonight, we thought it might be interesting to meet one of the pioneers in survey work and ask him a few questions for a change. Our guest, then, is the founder of the Crosley Research Reports, Mr. Arch Crosley. Well, good evening, Mr. Crosley.
Good evening, Fred.
It certainly is a pleasure to meet the man whose radio survey figures are considered the most accurate barometer of the popularity of every radio program.
Thank you, Fred. Fact is, radio surveys are only one phase of our business.
You mean Crosley Incorporated functions in other fields?
Oh, yes. The great majority of our surveys are concerned with marketing research.
Your business, then, is getting business for big business.
Well, that's one way to put it, Fred.
Well, how would you put it, Mr. Crosley?
I would say that our business is to get at the facts.
Well, tell me, how did you ever get into this profession of taking the average man apart to see what makes him tick?
Well, I've always been interested in this type of work, Fred. After finishing college, I started as research manager for an advertising agency. And later, I was director of research for the Literary Digest.
Ah, the late lamented Literary Digest. I still see the Literary Digest twice a year when I see my dentist. I always stop by on his little table there and see the digest. You didn't leave the Literary Digest when they made that famous wrong guess back in 1936.
Oh, no. I'd left long before that. I started my own organization in 1926.
Well, do you think the large-scale polls are more reliable today than they were back in the days of the Digest debacle?
Well, I don't think there's any comparison.
Well, would you say the present-day election forecasts are fairly accurate in their predictions?
I think surprisingly so, Fred. In the last election, the three major polls all anticipated the result. And on the final returns, we were all within 2.4% of the actual number of votes.
Well, covering 48 states, that's amazing. Tell me, Mr. Crosley, how do you explain the colossal miscalculation made by the Digest back in 1936?
Well, their poll didn't take in a true cross-section of the population. The Digest straw vote was taken too much among people in the middle and upper income brackets.
And as far as the Digest went, that was the last straw, wasn't it? Well, now about this market research. What is that?
The object of marketing research is to obtain a cross-section of consumers, to get their reactions to assist the manufacturer in the marketing of his product.
Well, what sort of products have you checked on?
Almost anything you can name. Fountain pens, pipes, foods, drugs, soaps, magazines.
You do research on highly specialized products?
Yes, we did one job, for example, on aneroid sphygmomanometers.
Excuse me, Mr. Crosley.
Are you leaving, Fred?
Well, I won't be a second. I just want to call Mr. Kieran and find out what that adenoid centipedometer, what that is.
Aneroid sphygmomanometer is a blood pressure instrument.
Oh, I see. Well, tell me, making these various surveys around the country, don't you find most people resent being questioned about their personal habits?
Quite the contrary, Fred. We find most people eager to cooperate and give us the information we want.
Well, I don't know. If you ever came around to my house and put me to the trouble of opening the door, and then you asked me about one of those celluloid speedometers.
It's aneroid sphygmomanometer, Fred.
Aneroid sphygmomanometer. You took the words right out of your mouth, Mr. Crosby. Why, as soon as you said aneroid, what you said there to me, the interview would be over. You know, I just thought of something that might make your work a lot easier, Mr. Crosley.
Any suggestions will be gladly received.
Well, in order to plumb the minds of average people, you spend thousands of dollars for staffs carrying on their questioning all over the country.
That's right.
Well, now, instead of going to this great expense, why don't you just get hold of an average man with an average wife and an average family and let them live in your office, you see? And then if a survey comes up, you've got them right there to give you service.
Well, there's only one trouble with your idea, friend.
It didn't get a laugh.
Not only that, but once you isolate an average family and they know they're being studied, they're bound to get self-conscious. And, of course, the family's no longer average.
No, of course, even as I find myself today, sub-average. Well, I guess this brings us around to your radio survey. There's one question about that poll that bothers me, Mr. Crosley.
Yeah, I know, Fred, and I'm very sorry, but I can't explain why Jack Benny's rating is higher than yours.
That is not the question. That is not the question, Mr. Crosley. Now, look, can I help it if that guy has more relatives scattered around the country than I have? What I wanted to ask you was this. How do you go about determining the popularity of the country's various radio programs?
Well, there are 14 different ways of gathering the data.
Which method is the best known?
It's the work we do for the Cooperative Analysis of Broadcasting.
That isn't anything like the Polaroid figure comptometer we were just talking about.
No, Fred, it's a committee appointed by the Association of National Advertisers and the American Association of Advertising Agencies.
You prepare periodic ratings on the various programs under the direction of this committee.
That's right.
Well, engaging the listener rating of a program, do you make your calls while the program is on the air?
We make our regular calls an hour or so later. Some cases we make calls while the program is on.
Well, is it possible, is it possible that right at this very moment, some members of your staff might be phoning people to see if they're listening to this program?
Yes, it's quite possible.
Well, then, in that case, I'd better not tell any jokes at this point. You know, people at home might be laughing so loudly. They might be sitting there laughing so loudly, they wouldn't be able to hear the phone ringing. So, if you don't mind, Mr. Crosley, I'll stop the hilarity here just for a minute to give those folks a chance to hear their phones if they ring. Now, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right. Now, we just wait and give them a good chance. I guess, that ought to boost our rating another 0.4 of a point.
Well, a good joke in there might have boosted it still more, friend.
Well, I know. If I had a good joke, Mr. Crosley, I wouldn't be here now. I'd be out in California writing for Bob Hope. But tell me, in all the years you've been conducting surveys, what is the oddest experience you have ever had?
Well, something happened to me last fall, which I think fills the bill. Somebody rang my doorbell and began surveying me on how I was going to vote.
Was it one of your own staff?
No, it was one of Dr. Gallup's men.
One of Dr. Gallup's men was calling on you. That's like knocking on Mr. Wrigley's front door and handing him a stick of beechnut gum. Well, Mr. Crosley, thank you a lot for taking on this little expedition to the polls this evening.
Thank you for having me over, Fred. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to hurry back to the office and wait.
Wait for what?
See how I come out on the next rating.
Well, I hope you won't be looking down on me.
Good night, Fred.
Good night, and thank you, Mr. Arch Cross. And now Texaco's girlfriend, Miss Wynne Murray, sings the song our sponsor was heard humming after seeing Mr. Crosley's last radio survey. The song, There'll Be Some Changes Made.
For there's a change in the weather, change in the sea. So from now on there'll be a change in me. My walk will be different, my talk and my name. Nothing about me's gonna be the same. I'm gonna change my way of living, if that ain't enough. Then I'll change the way I strut my stuff. Nobody wants you when you're old and gray. There'll be some changes made today. There'll be some changes made. They say don't change the old for the new. But I found out that this will never do. When you grow old, you don't last long. You're here today and then tomorrow you're gone. I loved a man for many years gone by. I thought his love for me would never die. He made some changes that would never do. From now on, I'm gonna make some changes too. I'm gonna change my way of singing, la da da da. Try a bit of swinging, la da 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 do day. Must make some changes from the old to the new. Must learn to do things like others do. I'm gonna change my way of living. If that ain't enough, then I'll change the way I strut my stuff. Nobody wants you when you're old and gray. There'll be some changes made today. Changes made.
Thank you very much, Wendy. That was fine. Say, what is this? It says here, Jimmy Wallington will give a talk in sign language. Jimmy, how in the world can you talk in sign language over the air?
Oh, that's a talk on sign language, Fred.
Huh.
Yes, those signs and markers on the highways that tell you how to drive safely. Well,
those signs like drive slow and see our city, drive fast and see our who's gal.
Yes.
Those you mean?
Yes, and those friendly signs that tell you when you're approaching curves and crossroads. Those signs speak a very welcome language. But there's another sign that motorists also appreciate.
What is that, Jimmy?
There's nothing more welcome to experienced motorists than the sight of the Texaco Registered Restroom sign. For that's a highway sign motorists have learned to trust. A sign which identifies neat and tidy restrooms, pleasant places in which to freshen up. You will find Texaco dealers in all 48 states who regard this courtesy highway service so highly that they have signed a pledge to keep their restrooms spick and span, completely equipped. And when you stop at a Texaco dealer, don't forget that you can get those two famous gasolines, Fire Chief, preferred by more and more tourists every year, and Sky Chief, the luxury fuel for those who want the best. And you can get insulated Havoline, Texaco's premium oil, or insulated Texaco motor oil, the long-distance oil at 25 cents. Drive in where you see the Texaco star. Whether you buy anything or not, you're welcome. Thank you. The Texaco Star Theater continues immediately after a short pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WABC, New York, 880 on your dial.
As I Look at You, played by the orchestra under the direction of Al Goodman, otherwise known as Citizen Corn. And now, ladies and gentlemen... Oh, the door. Come in.
A package for Kenny Baker.
Well, Kenny Baker isn't here just now. I'll take it.
It's COD, 50 cents.
Oh, well... Perhaps you'd better wait for Mr. Baker, son. I don't know.
It's all right. Mr. Baker ordered this.
Oh, you know what's in it?
Yeah, dollar bills. There's 100 of them. I'm selling them to Mr. Baker.
You are selling our Mr. Baker 100 $1 bills for 50 cents?
Yeah, that's 2 for a penny.
Oh.
You can't get them cheaper anywhere.
Well, I wouldn't.
You can take my word for this, dirt cheap.
Well, tell me, how can you afford to sell dollar bills 2 for a penny?
I print them myself.
You print them yourself?
Oh, yeah, it's easy. I have a little printing press in my garage. There's no overhead.
Yes?
I sell direct. That eliminates the middleman.
Well, that... Well, look, is that all you print, just the dollar bills?
No, I print 5, 10, and even $20 bills, too.
25, and... Well, look, if I'm not too inquisitive, how did you ever get into this business?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. You see, I used to print Christmas cards, but people only use Christmas cards once a year.
Once a year, but with the dollar bills...
They use them all year round.
They're not seasonal, as it
were. Oh, yeah.
Well, look, my tiny felon. Hasn't anyone ever told you that the United States Treasury also prints money?
No.
Yes.
5, 10s, and even 20s?
Yes.
That's the limit. The government is going too far.
Well, how do you mean?
I was making 2-cent stamps. The government start making.
Yes.
I'm making $1 bills. You say the government is making them.
Yes.
Starting next week, I'm printing defense bonds.
Yes?
If the government starts making defense bonds, I'll sue.
I don't know where Kenny meets these people. He must have a skeleton key to some psychopathic ward. Say, Kenny...
Yes, F.A., what is it?
Kenny, were you expecting a little man with a package?
Yeah, it's the money I bought. Did he come yet?
Yes, he came and I chased him out of here. You shouldn't associate with that fraud, Kenny. He's a counterfeiter.
What do you mean, counterfeiter? He's got the best money can buy. And I need plenty.
Kenny, you know if you need anything, you can always come to me.
You mean if I need money, I can come to you,
F.A.? Now, don't interrupt when I'm talking, Kenny. If there's ever anything I can do...
There is something you can do, F.A. I need money.
Kenny, money is the root of all evil. Now, what do you want with money?
I want a root for a friend. Next Sunday, I'm giving a big celebration.
What celebration?
I'm making next Sunday Dennis Day Day.
Dennis, you are giving Day a day?
Yes. It's in honor of Dennis's 2 years in radio.
Oh, you mean a futile fiesta, like Jack Benny's big testimonial celebration last week.
Yes.
Oh, well, that's all over. The banquet remains have been carted home to Benny's icebox. The gold loving cup has been put back on the floor in that pool room on Vine Street. All those men who made speeches and said nice things about Benny have been indicted for perjury. Oh, Benny's had his day in the sun. He's home now waiting for the blisters to peel.
You bet. And it's Dennis Day's turn now.
Oh, hello, Kenny.
Hello, Porty. Have you got the schedule all made out for Dennis Day Day?
Uh-huh. It's right here. The celebration begins with a progressive dinner.
Progressive dinner? What's that?
Well, we start the appetizers at one person's house, and then we go to other people's houses for each course.
And this calorie hunt is your idea, Kenny?
It's the least I can do for Dennis.
Yes, I guess youth must serve.
No, turkey will be served.
Turkey's being served right now, if it's any news to you. But tell me, how are you working this progressive dinner?
Well, first, we all have shrimp cocktail at my house.
Yeah.
Then we go to Mr. Goodman's house for clam chowder.
Correction, please. This week at Goodman's house, clam chowder is out.
No chowder, Maestro? Why?
Last week, my wife is making clam chowder.
Well, so why can't you have clam chowder this week?
This week, Mrs. Goodman's sister is using the clam.
Oh. Oh, I didn't know. Portland, mark Mr. Goodman down for chicken noodle soup.
This by Goodman is okay, but small helpings...
All right, Portland. Now, after a small helping of chicken soup, Shay Goodman...
We go to Jimmy Wallington's house for salad.
Wallington's for salad. And then?
We all go to your house.
For what?
Roast breast of Bermuda pheasant garnished with little filet mignon.
What?
Smothered in caviar.
With a side dish of guinea hen elbows, artichokes a la mode, crepe Suzette,
and matzo balls. On this, I am insisting.
I'm getting heartburn just hearing about this. Just a minute. Everybody else is serving ordinary little courses, and I am stuck for a course that sounds like a glutton's nightmare.
But everybody's pitching in, F.A. You're not going to spoil a celebration.
Well, all right, all right. Give me that menu. I'll see what I can do.
Oh, I knew you'd come through, F.A.
Oh, save your oil for the salad at Wallington's house. You'll need it. Now, what about the rest of the meal?
Well, after the big course at your house, Mr. Allen, we finish the dinner at Kenny's.
Fine. And what'll we have at your place, Kenny?
Finger bowls.
Just finger bowls?
With toothpicks.
For the big blow-off, we are stopping again at Goodman's.
For what?
I'm...
Gracious.
But Dennis won't be there.
But I, Dennis Day's best friend, tell the Metropolitan directors all about his wonderful voice.
When?
Right after I sing my 43rd number.
After you sing 43 songs, you come right to the point. Well, this is a tribute to Dennis Day, and Dennis is getting a finagling by proxy.
By proxy, he says.
Well, what's wrong with that, Maestro?
Dennis is a brunette. Proxy is a blonde.
Here we go. Now, look, Mr. Goodman, I was merely trying to be a sucker.
Dennis. Sucker is the game where they are hitting with their heads the ball.
That is soccer. I said they were taking advantage of Dennis.
Dennis is also a game. In Dennis, they are hitting the ball with ratchets.
That's rackets.
Rackets they are shooting on the 4th of July.
You take it, Kenny.
It isn't rackets, Mr. Goodman. It's rockets.
Rockets you are sitting in at home on the porch. 4th and back you are rocketing. 4th and back.
Please, Maestro. Have you finished?
Who knows? Something could come to me yet.
I would like to know who writes your repartee.
Repartee? He is also a musician. Erno Repartee.
Fine. That's also settled with the yodel yet, Mr. Goodman. Well, let's forget about the whole thing. And you, Kenny, forget about Dennis Day.
But Dennis deserves a tribute, F.A.
Well, what is the tribute? You're singing 43 numbers, and Dennis isn't being even heard from.
Oh, no? What about the grand finale?
Yes, Mr. Allen. The big finale is all for Dennis Day.
What happens?
I call Dennis long distance and deliver a 2-hour eulogy over the telephone all about Dennis.
A 2-hour phone call to California?
Yes.
Well, that's going to run into money.
Well, what's money at a time like this?
Well, does this eulogy end the day?
No, the grand climax comes with a big fireworks display in Hollywood.
Oh, Kenny, I take it all back. You are certainly doing a great job. A 2-hour eulogy by long-distance phone, a monster fireworks display. Tell me, when do the fireworks in Hollywood start? Right after your phone call?
Yes, the minute I reverse the charges.
Oh, I'm... Dennis Day is really a Kenny Centennial. Now, before you rehearse your 43 numbers, Kenny, you better sing your next song here, Flow Gently, Sweet After. And, Mr. Goodman, see how much of a rocket your band can make.
Flow
Flow gently, sweet Afton, among thy green braes. Flow gently, I'll sing thee a song in thy praise. My Mary's asleep by thy murmuring stream. Flow gently, sweet Afton, disturb not her dream. Thou stock dove whose echo resounds from the hill, ye wild whistling blackbirds in yon thorny dell. Crested lapwing, thy screaming forbear. I charge you, disturb not my slumbering care. Crystal stream, Afton, how lovely it glides and winds by the cot where my Mary resides. How wanton thy waters her snowy feet lave, as gathering sweet flowers she stems thy clear wave. Flow gently, sweet Afton, among thy green braes. Flow gently, sweet river, the theme of my lays.
Jimmy Wallington with just a word about duds.
There's no room for duds, for anything useless that contributes nothing in any emergency duty service. And duds in gasoline are also excess baggage, useless elements that won't fire quickly, won't go to work, contribute nothing. So when Texaco Fire Chief was designed for fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency duty vehicles, the duds had to go. Texaco Refining took them out. Only the responsive, quick energy elements are left in. That's why you can count on Fire Chief for fire alarm starts and fire engine power. Economical power, too. Next time, try a Texaco dealer and famous Fire Chief. The emergency duty gasoline at regular gasoline prices. There's not a dud in the tank full.
And now the Texaco Workshop players. Tonight, honoring last Sunday's Mother Day, they take you behind the scenes Mother's Day. They take you behind the scenes of a big business, the writing of Mother's Day verses. Our exposé is called A Poet Can't Live on His Salary, or Rhyme Doesn't Pay. Maestro? When did Mother's Day originate? Who sent the first rhymed couplet to his mother? History tells us it was Julius Caesar. On the second Sunday in May in the year 42 B.C., Julius Caesar sent a Roman courier to his mother, bearing this message.
Sic transit glory of Monday, I think of you today, it's Sunday. Veni, vidi, vidi, vici, mother dear, to me, you're peachy.
Many centuries later, during the French Revolution, Napoleon stopped the Battle of Waterloo on the second Sunday in May and sent this message to his mother.
Ma mère, vous used to be mon bon chéri. Vous used to be your nappy's toujours queen. But Nappy is the big boy now, and I'm nuts about the good old Josephine.
In the 19th century, an even greater tribute was paid to Mother by a well-known historical character who said,
I simply have this simple song to sing. It's just a silly sentimental thing. But still I say...
Just excuse me, just a second. You are an historical character who paid tribute to his mother?
Yes. I'm Whistler.
Whistler. So we see that Mother's Day has been observed down through the ages. And today in 1941, we take you to one of the biggest synthetic pottery mills in America, the Allen Sentiment Incorporated. Tonight on the eve of Mother's Day, we find President Allen, the tail on his swallowtail coat molting, his ascot tie askew, rhymes scribbled all over his Kleenex dickie, dashing into his private office. Well, good morning, Miss Dactyl. Gad, what a day.
Something wrong, Chief?
No, nothing is ever wrong in the Allen Sentiment Factory. Things are running along clock as usual.
Will you just greet us?
I see. Graduate cardsman, be seen a comb. I hope that you your Omer, okay?
Here's a vacation card.
Love from the girl you don't remember. You kissed me at Rockaway last September, okay. What's the next one?
The new draft greeting card.
Let me see. Rich man, poor man, salesman, plump. Uncle Sam has your number. Okay.
Here's the new nephew card, a greeting to his aunt.
Well, these other cards will have to wait, Miss Dactyl. Mother's Day is Sunday, and I'll have to concentrate on the Mother's Day rhymes as they come through.
You've checked 17.
I know. Allen Sentiments Incorporated is under contract to turn out 100 assorted Mother's Day rhymes by Sunday.
And only 17 are finished?
I know. There's nothing to worry about. Charlie Dribble, my prize Mother Day's poet, is working on the rhymes. Charlie's been writing my Mother's Day rhymes for 20 years.
How does he do it?
Charlie keeps his mother right in the office with him. His mother inspires him.
We're holding the presses, boss.
The presses, Hazlitt, for what?
They're Mother's Day cards.
Well, Charlie Dribble is writing them, Hazlitt.
But they ain't coming down on the assembly belt.
You mean our Mother's Day cards are not coming through?
No, sir. Dribble, stop writing, sir.
Impossible. Why, his mother is in there inspiring him.
Well, no rhymes is coming through. She must be laying down on the job.
Dad, I'll go in and see what's wrong. Charlie, where are you?
I'm right here.
Well, why aren't you writing?
I can't think of nothing.
Well, where is your mother? Well, what's wrong? What's the bottleneck, Charlie?
It's my mother's fault. She don't inspire me.
Well, you are falling down on your inspiration job, Mother Dribble.
Can I help it if this lump has run out of ideas?
I can't think of nothing.
Well, perhaps a few motherly gestures will arouse your maternal instinct, Charlie.
Yeah.
Now, if your mother ran her fingers through your hair...
What hair?
I too. She can't run her fingers through that bare skin there, can she? Well, perhaps if she sat on your lap. If he sat on your lap, Mother.
All right. Come here, Lummox.
Okay, Ma. Hey, your lap ain't what it used to be.
Now, no reminiscing, Charlie. You feel an inspiration?
I don't feel nothing.
What do I do now?
Well, mother him, Mother. He's got to write 73 more mother rhymes or I'm sunk. Now, chuck him under the chin.
Okay. Put your chin up, son.
Get you.
That's it.
Do it some more, Mumsy. Get you. Hold it, Mum. Hold it. I feel a poem coming on.
Good. What is it?
Mother dear, although you're old.
Yes. Now, your second line.
I can't think of nothing.
Oh, confound it. Your inspiration was short-lived. Now, quick, Mother Dribble. Have you got some candy or something?
I'll give him a lollipop.
Good.
Here you are, son. Yeah. A nice red lolly.
Oh, boy, it's raspberry.
Let's go, Charlie. Mother dear, although you're old...
I love you more than the pot of gold.
Great. Well, that's card 18. Yeah. Only 72 or more mother rhymes to go, Charlie. Go on.
Mother dear.
Yes?
Mother dear. I can't think of nothing.
Mother Dribble, resume kitching.
You mean I gotta keep babying this goon all day?
Well, that's what you're being paid for. Now, do you want me to report this to the Mother's Union?
Kitchy-cooing this lump.
I could be out going places having some fun.
I can't take another.
Oh, shut up.
Now quiet, you two, and get back to work.
Okay. Get you.
I got it. Mumsy, you're feeble and clumsy.
Now, fine, we're starting. I'll get back to my office. I'll see you later.
Get.
Dad, what a session.
How's Charlie doing?
He's finally back on the maternal beam, and I hope everything will be all right. Well, what's wrong now, Mother Dribble?
This kitschy business, I can't stand it.
But Charlie has to be inspired.
I know. For 40 years, I've been inspiring him.
Yes?
But this kitschy cooing is the last straw. I'm only 86. I got my own life to live.
But Charlie's prime. It's Mother's Day.
Mother's Day, my mess jacket. I'm quitting. I could get another job.
Doing what?
I'm going on the stage.
On the stage at your age?
If I can kitchy-kitchy here, I can coochie-coochie there.
Where?
At Minsky's. Goodbye.
Dad, this is a catastrophe. I've got to get those 72 mother rhymes before nightfall.
We're still holding the presses, boy.
I know, Hazlitt.
Where are them Mother's Day cards?
Charlie's mother, his inspiration, has just walked out. Hazlitt, I'm sunk.
No, I want my mama.
Get back to your cubicle, Charlie, and get to work.
But I can't think of nothing.
Pull yourself together, Charlie. Are you a man or are you a mouse?
I'm a mouse. No, I can't think of nothing. I want my mama.
What's he bawling
about? He can't write without his mother.
No kidding.
If this lunk doesn't finish his poems, we're ruined.
Where's my mama? I can't think of nothing.
Is there something you can do, boy?
I'll try. Now, look, Charlie, you've got 72 more verses to turn out. Now, you sit down there and get going.
But I can't think of nothing. I want my mama.
All right, you'll get her.
Where?
I will be your mother.
My father ain't gonna like it.
I don't think I'll be a mother. I'll be a reasonable facsimile.
What's that?
Look, I'll pull this curtain down.
Yeah.
I'll drape this window curtain over my head like a shawl. I'll make as though I'm your mother, you see, and inspire you.
Okay, I'll get my pencil
now,
out.
Come on, son. Kitchy-kitchy-coo. Write some poems for mother.
Are you inspiring
yes,
me?
Yes, son.
I don't feel
come
nothing.
Come on, sonny boy. Don't let Mumsy down.
Are you my ma?
Of course I'm your ma, son. Kitchy-kitchy-coo.
Say, ma.
Yes, son.
You need a shave, ma.
But get Mother's Day, sonny boy. Look me in the eye.
All right.
Kitchy-kitchy-kitchy-kitchy.
Oh, that's good.
Kitchy-kitchy. Let's go, Junior.
All right, Mumsy, here's your poem. Number 19. Mother dear, while skies are blue, to you alone I will be true.
That's fine.
All right, number 20.
Son.
I'm hot now. Mother dear, you ain't no cutie, but to me you're a sweet patootie.
Now, very good, son. Go on. Well, Charlie's off, Hazlitt. Allen Sentiment Incorporated is safe.
Great work, boss. How did you do it? Charlie thinks you're his mother.
Why, it was simple, Hazlitt. If a broken-down actor like Benny can play Charlie's aunt, I can play Charlie's mother. Well, we're a little late, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening, and good night. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.